Discerning Hearts presents The Ascent of Mount Carmel by St. John of the Cross, translated by David Lewis and read by Ed Humpel. Book 2, Chapter 12, which treats of natural imagery apprehensions, describes their nature, and proves they cannot be a proportionate means of attainment to the union with God, shows the harm which results from an inability to detach oneself from them.
Before discussing the imaginary visions which are wont to be represented supernaturally to the interior sense, the imagination, and the fancy, it is expedient that I should now, to proceed orderly, speak of the natural apprehensions incident to the same interior bodily sense. I adopt this course that we may advance from the less to the greater, from that which is more outward to that which is more inward, to that most interior recollection wherein the soul is united unto God. This too is the course I have hitherto observed. In the first place, I treated of the detachment of the soul from the natural apprehensions of exterior objects, and, consequently, from the natural powers of the desires. This I did in the first book, while speaking of the night of sense. Then I treated in detail of detachment from exterior supernatural apprehensions, to which the exterior senses are liable, as in the preceding chapter, so that I may guide the steps of the soul into the night of the Spirit in this second book. Now the first subject of discussion is the interior bodily sense, the imagination and fancy, out of which we must cast all imaginary forms and apprehensions naturally incident thereto, and show how impossible it is for the soul to attain to union with God until their operations shall have ceased, because they can never be the proper and proximate means of union. The senses of which I am now speaking particularly are two, bodily and interior, called imagination and fancy, which in their order subserve each other. In the one there is something of reasoning, though imperfect and in an imperfect way. The other, the imagination, forms the image. For our purpose, the discussion of either is equivalent to that of the other, and therefore, when I do not mention them both, let it be understood that what is said of the one is applicable to the other also, and that I am speaking indifferently of both, without distinguishing between them. All, therefore, that the senses perceive and fashion are called imaginations and fancies, that is, forms represented to the senses in bodily shape and likeness. These may take place in two ways. Supernaturally, when, without the action of the senses, they may and do become present passively before them. These are imaginary visions, wrought supernaturally, of which I shall speak hereafter. The other way is natural, when the senses actively affect them by their own operation, through forms, figures, and images. These two powers serve for meditation, which is a discursive act by means of imagery, forms, and figures, wrought and fashioned in the senses. We picture to ourselves Christ on the cross, or bound to the pillar, or God sitting on his throne in great majesty. So also we imagine glory as the most beautiful light, and represent before ourselves any other object, human or divine, of which the faculty of imagination is capable. All these imaginations and apprehensions are to be emptied out of the soul, which must remain in darkness so far as it concerns the senses, in order that we may attain to the divine union, because they bear no proportion to the proximate means of union with God, as neither do corporeal things, the objects of the five exterior senses. The reason is that nothing enters the imagination but through the exterior senses. The eye must have seen, or the ear must have heard, or other senses must first have come cognizant of all that is in it. Or at the utmost, we can only form pictures of what we have seen, heard, or felt, and these forms are not more excellent than what the imagination has received through the senses. though we picture in our imagination palaces of pearls and mountains of gold, because we have seen gold and pearls, yet after all this is nothing more than one piece of gold or a single pearl, even though the imagination ranges them in a certain order. And as all created things cannot have any proportion with the being of God, it follows that all the conceptions of the imagination, which must resemble them, cannot serve as proximate means of union with Him. Those persons, therefore, who represent God to their minds under any sort of figure, or as a great fire or light, or anything else, thinking Him to be like them, are very far from drawing near unto Him. For though such considerations, forms, and methods of meditation may be necessary for beginners, in order to inflame and fill their souls with love, through the instrumentality of sense, as I shall explain hereafter, and though they may serve as remote means of union, through which souls must usually pass to the goal and resting place of spiritual repose, still they must so make use of them as to pass beyond them, and not dwell upon them forever. If we dwell upon them, we shall never reach the goal, which is not like the remote means, neither has it any proximate relation with them. The steps of a ladder have no proximate relation with the goal and place to which we ascend by it, toward which they are but means. So if he who climbs does not leave behind all the steps so that none remain, or if he rests upon one of them, he will never ascend to the summit, to the peaceful resting of the goal. The soul, therefore, that will ascend in this life to the supreme good and rest, must pass beyond all these steps of considerations, forms, and notions, because they bear no likeness or proportion to the end, which is God, toward which it tends. We must not suppose, saith the Apostle, the divinity is to be like unto gold, or silver, or stone, the graving of art and device of man. Great, therefore, is the mistake of those spiritual persons who, having labored to draw near unto God by means of imagery, forms, and meditations, such as become beginners, while God would attract them to more spiritual, interior, and unseen good by depriving them of the sweetness of discursive meditation, do not accept the guidance, neither venture nor know how to detach themselves from these palpable methods to which they have been accustomed. They retain these methods still, seeking to advance by them and by meditation upon exterior forms, as before, thinking it must be so always. They take great pains in the matter, but find very little sweetness or none, yea, rather dryness, weariness, and disquiet of soul increase, and grow the more they search after the sweetness they had before, it now being impossible for them to have it as they had it at first. The soul has no more pleasure in its first food, which was of the senses, but requires another of greater delicacy, interior, and less cognizable by the senses, subsisting not in the travail of the imagination, but in the repose of the soul, and in that quietness thereof, which is more spiritual. The more the soul advances in spirituality, the more it ceases from the operations of its faculties on particular objects, for it then gives itself up to one sole, pure, and general act, and so its powers cease from the practice of that method by which they once travelled toward the point to which the soul was tending, as the feet cease from movement and are at rest when the journey is over. For if all were movement, there would be no goal to reach, and if all things are means, where or when shall we enjoy the end? How sad it is to see men who, when the soul would be at peace in the repose of interior quiet, where God fills it with refreshment and peace, disturb it, draw it away to outward things, compel it to travel again along the road it had passed, and to abandon the goal where it reposes for the sake of the means and considerations which guided it to its rest. This is not effected without loathing and repugnance on the part of the soul, which would repose in this tranquility as in its proper place, as it happens to him who after toilsome labor has attained repose, for when he is made to return to his work, he feels it painfully. And as they do not understand the secret of their new condition, they imagine themselves to be idle, doing nothing, and so do not suffer themselves to be at rest, but strive to reproduce their former reflections and discursive acts. They are therefore full of dryness and trouble, because they seek there for sweetness where there is no longer sweetness for them. To them the proverb applies, the more it freezes, the more it binds. The more obstinately they cling to this way, the worse it becomes for them, because they lead the soul further away from spiritual peace. This is to abandon what is greatest for what is least, to travel backwards along the road they came, and do again what they have done before. To these my counsel is, learn to abide with attention, in loving, waiting upon God in a state of quiet. Give no heed to your imagination, nor to its operations, for now, as I have said, the powers of the soul are at rest, and are not exercised, except in the sweet and pure waiting of love. If at times they are excited, it is not violently, nor with meditation elaborately prepared, but by the sweetness of love, more under the influence of God than by the ability of the soul, as I shall hereafter clearly explain. Let this, for the present, suffice to show how necessary it is for those who would make progress to abandon these methods and ways of the imagination at the proper time, when their growth, in the state wherein they are, requires it. And that we may know when this time is come, I shall describe certain signs which the spiritual man is to observe, that he may thereby recognize the time when he may freely avail himself of the goal already mentioned, and leave behind him all intellectual reflections and all the acts of the imagination.
Book 2, Chapter 13, wherein are set down the signs which the spiritual persons will find in himself, whereby he may know at what season he behooves him to leave meditation and reasoning and pass to the state of contemplation.
To avoid confusion in my teaching, I find it necessary in this chapter to explain when the spiritual man should abstain from the meditation which rests on imaginary forms and mental representations, in order that he may not abstain from it sooner or later than the Spirit calls him. For as it is necessary to abstain from it at the proper time, in order to draw near unto God, that we may not be hindered by it, so also we must not cease from it before the time, lest we go backwards. For though all that the powers of the soul may apprehend cannot be proximate means of union for those who have made some spiritual progress, still they serve as remote means to dispose and habituate the minds of beginners to that which is spiritual by means of the senses, and to clear the way of all other low forms and images, temporal, worldly, and natural. With this view, I will mention here certain signs and evidences, three in number, by observing which the spiritual man may know whether the time is come for him to cease from meditation or not. 1. When he finds that he cannot meditate, nor exert his imagination, nor derive any satisfaction from it, as he was wont to do, when he finds dryness there, where he was accustomed to fix the senses and draw forth sweetness, then the time is come. But while he finds sweetness, and is able to meditate as usual, let him not cease therefrom, except when his soul is in peace, of which I shall speak when I describe the third sign. 2. When he sees that he has no inclination to fix the imagination or the senses on particular objects, exterior or interior. I do not mean when the imagination neither comes nor goes, for it is disorderly even in the most complete self-recollection, but only when the soul derives no pleasure from tying it down deliberately to other matters. 3. The third sign is the most certain of the three, namely, when the soul delights to be alone, waiting lovingly upon God, without any particular considerations, in interior peace, quiet, and repose, when the acts and exercises of the intellect, memory, and will, at least discursively, which is the going from one subject to another, have ceased, nothing remaining except the knowledge and attention, general and loving, of which I have spoken, without the particular perception of aught else. The spiritual man must have observed these three signs together, at least, before he can venture with safety to abandon the state of meditation for that of the way of spiritual contemplation. It is not enough for him to observe the first without the second, for it may happen that he cannot meditate on the things of God, as before, because of distractions and the absence of due preparation. He must therefore have regard to the second sign, and see whether he has no inclination or desire to think of other things. For when this inability to fix the imagination and the senses on the things of God proceeds from distraction or lukewarmness, the soul readily inclines to other matters, and these lead it away from God. Neither is it sufficient to have observed the first and second sign if we do not also discern the third. For though we cannot meditate or think on the things of God, and have no pleasure either in dwelling upon anything else, yet this may be the effect of melancholy, or some other oppression of the brain or the heart, which is wont to produce a certain suspension of our faculties, so that we think upon nothing, nor desire to do so, nor have any inclination thereto, but rather remain in a kind of soothing astonishment. By way of defense against this, we must be sure of the third sign, which is a loving knowledge and attention in peace, as I have said. It is, however, true that in the commencement of this estate this loving knowledge is, as it were, imperceptible, because it is then wont to be, in the first place, most subtle and delicate, and, as it were, unfelt, and because, in the second place, the soul, having been accustomed to meditation, which is more cognizable by sense, does not perceive, and, as it were, does not feel this new condition, not subject to sense, and which is purely spiritual. This is the case especially when, though not understanding his condition, the spiritual man will not allow himself to rest therein, but will strive after that which is cognizable by sense. This striving, notwithstanding the abundance of loving interior peace, disturbs him in the consciousness and enjoyment of it. But the more the soul is disposed for this tranquility, the more will it grow therein continually, and the more conscious it will be of this general loving knowledge of God, which is sweeter to it than all besides, because it brings with it peace and rest, sweetness and delight, without trouble. To make this matter more clear, I shall explain in the following chapter why these signs are necessary for the direction of the soul.